So yeah, do you want to tell me a little bit more about George Eastwood and Lap Lake?
Yeah, of course. Let's start with George, because he was the pilot and he was the most seriously injured. He was born on the 22nd of May 1896 at Alfreton in Derbyshire. He was the son of William and Sarah Ann Whittaker. And William was a railway worker, went on to be a train driver. I think it's indicative that was some of the changing picture of the social background of the new RAF as it came into being. It was looking at people with technical backgrounds of a social circle that wouldn't have been considered for commissioning before the war. I said he was born in 1896. His papers actually say he was born in 1897. But a little bit of digging through the census returns, I think there has been a mistake on the RAF papers. It was, as far as we can determine, 1896 that he was born. I don't think it's a deliberate mistake. He had two siblings. He was the eldest, or George rather, was the eldest of the family. His sister was Dorothy Marjorie. She was born in 1897. I've managed to find nothing out about her in terms of who she married, whether she was affected by the First War or anything like that, or whether there were children. And likewise, his youngest brother, William, born 9th of June 1900. Again, I know nothing of his family history. I mean, Eastwood is not an uncommon name. There's a number of them in Derbyshire. It's quite difficult to trace. But as we'll cover, I don't know. I have a rough idea of what happened to George after the war. And if there are relatives out there who suddenly realises that George was their grandfather or great-grandfather, I'd be delighted to hear from them. Or it may be that he has great nephews and nieces through either Dorothy or William. The 1911 census records that George, by this stage, was an apprentice signwriter. His details of how he became to be in the RAF are a little sketchy. He commissioned into the Royal Flying Corps on the 7th of July 1916 and went to number 31 Training Squadron at Witton near Cambridge. And as far as we can determine from there, he never went overseas to fight in France. So 20 Squadron and going to India was his first operational deployment. The commissioning into the Royal Flying Corps comes from his army documents, which are again available in the National Archives, his officer's PFAR. And his Air Force PFAR is also on record at the National Archives. We do know that he was at Farnborough School for wireless operators on the 31st of March 17, and that he then transferred to the RAF when it formed on the 1st of April in 18. But as I say, it looks as there is no record we can find of him going overseas to France to serve at that stage. So I've come to the conclusion that he was either creamed off as an instructor and never allowed to go to France. Or that he somehow managed to wangle a cushy posting, as we would describe it now, and didn't go to the front. However, he's clearly on 20 Squadron's crew list for being transferred to India. So he shipped from Marseille with the rest of the rest of the squadron, and he's recorded as being the first casualty of 20 Squadron. If he was shot through the chest, as his casualty card indicates, he was lucky to be alive by the time he had been dragged out of his aircraft, dragged up to Badama Post, and then put on a lorry and bumped over tracks and very rough roads back to Kohat initially, and then Simla. But by August, he is recorded as doing reasonably well at the hospital in Simla. Part of my conclusions is that actually the section, the machine gun section, who helped rescue him probably were accompanied by a medic, somebody who had at least enough knowledge to put him wound side down so that his lungs would drain if he had been shot in the chest, and who knew enough to keep him as immobilised as possible and give him the best chance and to somehow patch his wound. Because those were the days where blood transfusions were not available, plastic wound sealing kits were not available. All they would have had was very basic artificial respiration. They didn't have the... So he was, I suspect, lucky. He was transferred on the SS Bremen from Bombay back to UK on the 26th of September 1919. His replacement as a flight commander in 20 Squadron was Captain Glennie, Military Cross, another fairly famous name. George was transferred to the unemployed list on 2nd December 1919, and so left the Air Force then. His family history thereafter, it's a bit ropey, but I believe that he married a girl called Constance Cocker, that's C-O-K-E-R, in Peterborough in 1926. And she appears to have remained in Peterborough while George was working as a commercial traveller, because in the censuses, he's recorded away at various locations, principally in the northeast around Newcastle, whereas she appears to have remained at home in Peterborough. So it was probably a pretty tough existence, as it was for many people between the wars. So far as we can determine, again, that the pair of them had a son who I think was a Michael John Eastwood, who's born in 1929. Yeah, and thereafter we rather lose track of them, other than I think that George Eastwood and Constance, his wife, died in Truro in Cornwall in 77 and 76 respectively. Their son Michael John possibly married in 1954 a Loveday Hocking, again in Truro. Probably, we think, died in 2004. It's possible that Loveday is still alive. I don't know that 100%.
Loveday Hocking is such a great name.
It's a great name. Of course, it wouldn't be her married name, but that was, I think, her maiden name. It's also possible, and I can't determine, find it through all the genealogical sites. It's possible that Michael John and Loveday divorced at some stage, and either or both of them may have remarried, but I'm not sure. So, I'll say, if there's anybody who thinks that they are descended in some way or related in some way to George Eastwood, then I'd be delighted to hear from them.
Well, yeah, well, I think at that point it's worth saying if you do, if you are the one person listening who does have that connection, then you can get in contact with me either via Twitter at RAFM Historian or via email using the Royal Air Force Museum's website. And we're happy to pass on any messages to Paul which you might have.
It would be particularly, I have a photograph of the Observer, David Lepreake. I have no photograph of George, and it would be something that would be really nice to have a photograph of George, preferably in uniform, but just to know what he looked like would mean a lot. That probably takes us onto the Observer.
Yeah, more unusual names. So I'm going to set myself up for a fall here and say you must, of course, know far more about Lepreake.
We do know a bit more about David McGeechy, and as you would guess from a name like that, he was a Scot. He was born on the 6th of December, 1899. He was a son of Hugh and a girl called Fanny Allen. I think she was Fanny Allen McGeechy as her maiden name, and that they gave David her maiden name as his middle name. It was a fairly large family. Hugh was a colliery manager, so he was working above ground by the time that David was born. He had siblings, all elder than him. He was the youngest of the family. He had three sisters, Marion, Jessica, and Fanny. And his elder brother was John Hugh Lepreake. Turning for a second to John, he joined the army in 1916. He was caught up in the Derby Volunteers, but he was eventually discharged as being unsuitable for military service. He wasn't as tall as his brother. He was a rather short lad. He's 5'2", so he was actually under official army height. Anyway, David actually joined the RAF at Eastchurch on the 8th of December 1917. He had no such height issues as his brother. He was 5'8" tall. And he then was part of the transfer to the RAF in April 1918. By that stage, he was going through his observer training, which consisted of gunnery, so he was learning how to use the Lewis guns that the Bristol fighter would be armed with, or indeed a fee should he have gone to one of those squadrons. He was taught observation techniques, in particular how to take notes of his observations and record them in a suitable manner. As part of his training, by that stage of the war, coming towards the end of the war in 1918, He actually would have had to undertake two test flights, effectively, where he would fly a route or he would be flown over a route, and he would have to take notes of what he observed during the course of that route. He would also have been taught both photography and wireless telegraphy. At some stage, he was deemed suitable for commissioning, again, sort of an indication of the changing social nature of the services at that stage. He went to officer training on the 20th of July 1918 and was commissioned on the 26th of September, shipped straight out to France at that point, and joined 20 Squadron in France on the 1st of October 1918. And was flying by the 23rd of October when, with Captain Alan Perkins Military Cross as his pilot, he shot down a Fokker. So we know that he scored at least one victory with 20 Squadron in France. There's also a photograph of 20 Squadron officers in Robert Selwood's recent book, Winged Sabres, which shows 20 Squadron officers and is autographed by David. It's autographed by all of the officers, and you can pick David's signature out amongst them. What I can't do is, the quality of the photograph isn't quite good enough for me to work out from the photograph which officer he is within the photograph. I have a reasonably good idea, but I'm not 100%. Anyway, the war, that photo was taken literally on the, I think it was the 13th of November, so just as the war ended. And then 20 Squadron shipped in May out to India, and David was flying in the rear cockpit of Foxtrot 4626 when he was shot down with George Eastwood on the 30th of July 1919. And again, if you can turn these things as lucky, he was a bit more lucky than his pilot in that he wasn't as badly hurt. He lacerated his face. He lost three teeth, according to the casualty card. David was casevac'd to Simla along with George Eastwood, whereas George was sent back to UK from there, or shipped back to UK on the Bremen. David was sent forward again, the operations in Waziristan with 20 Squadron. And we know that from the squadron operational records that he was involved in bombing missions against the Wazirs, certainly in late September, and again on the 7th and 8th of October. He must have left the squadron fairly shortly after that, because his discharge took place on the 18th of May 1920. At some stage thereafter, he married an Elizabeth Simpson. We know that they were living in Middlesex in 1939 and 1940, and David died on the 4th of August 1966 in Oxford. Elizabeth subsequently died also in Oxford in 1997. I say, I know she had a niece, but as far as I'm aware, David and Elizabeth didn't have children. But there are other relatives in various guises through either his siblings or through Elizabeth.